Bonzek, and I'm going to walk you through a case study of the data-driven decision-making process using a high-quality curriculum-based assessment for the purposes of planning instruction. So if that's not a mouthful, I don't know what is. But for any of you who may have our text called Assessing Young Children in Inclusive Settings, the Blended Practices Approach, this was a book I wrote with my colleague Dr. Jennifer Grisham, you can turn to page 183 and check out Appendix B. Some of you might be in a blended practices book study, and you might have Appendix B as a downloadable PDF, or you can just kind of sit back, or if you're driving, stay alert, and listen to this story about a teacher. Her name is Mrs. Donovan, and she's a teacher in a blended preschool classroom. I'm going to do a mixture of reading from the actual appendix, which is published in the Blended Practices book, the Assessing Young Children in Inclusive Settings, and then at times I'm going to pause and explain why this teacher, in this case Mrs. Donovan, sort of did what she did to engage in the data-driven decision-making process in order to plan instruction for children with diverse abilities. So basically, she's going to do the five steps of gathering, documenting, summarizing, analyzing, and interpreting. And her interpreting is for the purpose of planning tiered instruction, blended instruction, however you want to kind of think about it, but it's this idea of creating embedded learning opportunities where you're teaching common outcomes, targeted outcomes, and individualized outcomes simultaneously. So within the same activity or experience, Mrs. Donovan is going to know who she's teaching common outcomes to, which would be all children, who she's teaching targeted outcomes to, which would be children who are struggling based upon the data that she interpreted from her curriculum-based assessment, and then which children have an individualized outcome. May not be an IEP goal, but it certainly is something that an individual child needs in terms of attention. So in this story, Mrs. Donovan is a teacher in this blended classroom. And so she has 12 children in her morning class, and she has some that have individualized education plans. She has others that are typically developing. She has others that are considered at risk. So there's always this sort of notion of diverse abilities, or for those of you who follow me, know that every child's a triangle, so it doesn't really matter the labels that we have. Also in this story, Mrs. Donovan uses what we call the AEPS, the Assessment, Evaluation, and Programming System. And in this case, it was the second edition. And this is what's called a curriculum-based assessment. Many of you might use Teaching Strategies Gold or the Transdisciplinary Play-Based Assessment, also which are considered curriculum-based assessments. But in this example, Mrs. Donovan is using the AEPS to gather information in an authentic way, which is that first step of the data-driven decision-making process. And she's going to use that AEPS on all of her children. So sometimes people think the AEPS is just for children with disabilities. But in fact, it is your kind of go-to resource if you're going to do a comprehensive curriculum framework and you want a look at all body parts, all children, then the AEPS is a good match for that. And then she's going to do the second step, which is documenting her observations and her interactions and her interviews by using numerical scores. So the AEPS uses a 2 to indicate that a child is able to do something independently and consistently, a 1 to say that the child met the criteria partially, they needed assistance, they are inconsistent, or it's just emerging, and then a 0 to mean that the child has not yet performed the skill that is either too far away from them or they're just not able to do it yet. So she's going to use a numerical score to do the second step of data-driven decision-making. Remember, there are 5 steps. Gathering, so she's going to do that through her daily interactions with children. Second step is to document, and so she's going to use a 2, 1, and 0. She's also going to use a series of letters, and she could also write anecdotal notes that are sort of her perception or remind her what she was thinking at the time when she goes back to interpret the results. And so the letters that she uses in the AEPS are things that will kind of hint at what's going on, especially when a child receives a score of a one. What was it? Did the child need assistance? Did their behavior interfere? Was there something about the quality that she was worried about? Did she have to directly test it? So she's really going to give some rich data to work from later. If she were only to use the scores, the 2, 1, and 0, she wouldn't have a lot of richness to later interpret. So she's going to layer that with these letters that also mean something, a kind of a coding system, and she can also take some anecdotal notes. Then she's going to move to the third step where she's going to summarize, and she can use a combination of narrative summaries, visual summaries, and numerical summaries. So I'll read from the Appendix B here. The narrative summaries captured Mrs. Donovan's reflections regarding the performance of a group of children. In her narration, Mrs. Donovan notes that several of the children were having difficulty with initiation, which is a specific aspect of the broad outcomes that she was looking at. Expanding on her own concern that was noted in the narrative summary, Mrs. Donovan chose to visually summarize the entire class's performance on initiation. She also created a visual summary of all children's performance across the items that were documented on the APS. So what she's doing is that she's making a visual summary. One of them is a graph that says, okay, which percentage of the children are having difficulty initiating and what percentage are not having difficulty. And in that visual, she had a pie graph and she found that 42% of her children had difficulty with initiating and 58% did not. She then went through and said, okay, let's look at all of the items in a way that I can sort of make sense of them in terms of which children have mastered it, which number of items are emerging, and which items do kids not yet do, so that she could sort of look at that pattern as she sort of began to think about it in a way that was taking these 2s, 1s, and 0s and making some meaning out of it. So these numerical summaries that she generated could do percentages, again, like that 42 and the 58, and it can do the whole class as a wide lens. So she can say, okay, kid by kid, this is the percent of items achieved, or the percentage of items emerging, or the percentage of items that were not yet accomplished. So she has a lot of options about how to summarize it. And then she can move into analyzing. Remember, I started to hint at she's going to look for patterns and trends regarding all of the children's growth and development. And she was really particularly surprised to see that the wide range of children, their performance on how they engaged in cooperative activities. So she went back and she looks to see, what does cooperative activity mean? And why is it that I have this kind of wide range of performance on that particular item? So she defined, or by the APS, cooperative activities is defined as activities that require one or more peers, encourage children to share and exchange or assist one another with materials, contain jobs, roles, and identities for children to assume, and often lead to mutual benefit. So this is like a really big skill, right? These are lots of things that kids are doing. And this is where we start to think about how are kids doing being play partners? How are they doing initiating cooperative play? How are they doing during small group and large group? So she's really looking at patterns and trends around different elements in terms of who's initiating and who's not, which items were achieved or independently done by children, which were emerging. And then she starts to look at this kind of interesting pattern or trend around a group of behaviors, around social behaviors in terms of being play partners. So the results from this kind of comprehensive look at all of her children, regardless of gender, age, experience, eligibility status, she wanted to look at everybody. And she starts to then sort children and understand how many children have needs at which kind of level. How many children are good to go with universal instruction towards common outcomes? How many children need more focused instruction for targeted outcomes? And how many children need specialized instruction for these kind of individualized outcomes? And so in her sort of classification, she was able to put 7 children were sort of on track, doing well, especially around this notion of cooperative activities and participating in groups. four of her kids were really struggling. They were either missing a component or they were having difficulty in terms of the interaction with the peer. And then she had one child that was really demonstrating some behaviors that were interfering with his ability to engage successfully in cooperative activities. So from this data-driven decision-making process, she was able to gather, document, summarize in a variety of ways, analyze by looking for interesting patterns and trends, and then she's able to interpret how many children and which children are at, some people think of it as which tier, but which ones are a match for universal instruction, which also need some targeted instruction, and which are going to need individualized instruction, regardless of, again, their eligibility status. So she's then able to start planning her instruction. And this is where that great match between what I'm teaching and how I'm teaching starts to evolve. Not before this, because she's really got to get a handle on what is her what. What is she going to teach as the outcome that is common, that is targeted, and that is individualized. And so in this, the rest of the case study, it walks through how Mrs. Donovan is going to plan activities and learning opportunities to allow those seven children who are on track to continue to engage in cooperative activities, to refine those skills, to become more masterful, to become more proficient as that ability to self-regulate emerges as well. And then for those four children who were missing a component or were having some sort of level of difficulty, she can start to think about, okay, how am I going to deliver some focused instruction around the component of what they're missing, this ability to engage in cooperative activities, more specifically, to initiate greetings, something like that. So she's kind of drilling down and finding it. And then she's saying, wow, the quality of how some of my kids are talking, their intelligibility, if you will, is kind of getting in their way. This is what they're struggling with. So I really need to deliver some focused instruction to the targeted outcome of their need to be understood by their peers. And then we have the one child who really had some barriers and was missing some foundational skills. And that was because the child really demonstrated a bunch of stress-related behaviors. Some of the times we call those challenging behaviors, but she noticed that she needed to maybe go a little bit deeper. So as the story continues, she goes back in and looks at Trevor a little bit more and goes around the data-driven decision-making process one more time to make sure that she's really honing in on what's the what that she wants to teach for Trevor, and that she can then track progress more precisely in terms of his performance over time. So hopefully this helps you think a little bit deeper about the data-driven decision-making process and how a comprehensive curriculum-based assessment can give you enough data to do those five steps to help you gather through authentic interactions and daily experiences, to document using numbers, letters, anything that sort of even products that you take a picture of or capture something on video or audio. Then you summarize, again, using multiple and different techniques such as visual or narrative or numerical. And then you begin to analyze by looking for patterns and trends so that you can sort which children have needs at which level of supported outcomes. So which children are on track for common outcomes, targeted and individualized, and then you can interpret, which is for this purpose, is to plan instruction that is tiered, where we simultaneously deliver universal instruction for all children, focused instruction for those who are struggling or development has stalled, and then individualized instruction when we're trying to remove a barrier or address a foundational prerequisite skill. Mm-hmm.